powered by Righteous Media. Welcome to Independent Americans. Welcome to episode 280 and the next installment of our Meet the Independent Candidate series for 2024. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. The NBA playoffs are here. Go Knicks. The NHL playoffs are here. Go Rangers. And the political playoffs are here. Go America. But it is also chaos season all across America. And now is a time to stay vigilant. That's the sound of an American flag being burned and protesters chanting Free, Free Palestine at the 107th Infantry War Memorial on Fifth Avenue in New York City. The 107th Infantry Memorial is a giant bronze figural group depicting seven larger-than-life-size World War I foot soldiers in battle. The monument shows the camaraderie and the unity of the so-called doughboys from the American military, a term coined by British soldiers in World War I to describe the American counterparts, and their large round buttons on the American uniforms reminded the British of biscuits known as doughboys. It's significant for many reasons, including the fact that it commemorates the common citizen soldiers of World War I, the everyday men and some women who were drafted to serve in the Great War. Most memorials in that time honored generals and high-ranking officers and single people. This one is different because it's a group of average Americans who answered the call. And it was defaced and disgraced by protesters in their so-called Day of Rage protests. Jackasses, this is not helping your cause. Desecrating a war memorial, one to the everyday soldier, is not a way to start a conversation or to get folks to support your protest. But maybe this is a teachable moment, especially for the younger protesters who need to know that history about what that memorial stands for. Because no matter where you stand on the protests, you should stand for the rule of law and the basic values of respect. Symbols are important. But even more important are laws. Break them, and you should be held accountable. This is beyond free speech. No matter where you stand on the protest, you should stand with the rule of law and the basic rules of respect, especially for generations of Americans that fought and died for our rights to free speech and to protest. And the NYPD is looking for tips to help find these people who defaced the memorial. And even Mayor Adams, Mayor Disaster himself, has offered $5,000 of his own money to help find them. Now, I don't think people need Mayor Adams' personal money, but the NYPD needs everyone's help finding the culprits, so spread the word. They should be identified by this video and arrested as soon as possible. There's lots of emotions around this and around the protests nationwide. And again, maybe this is one giant teachable moment, and we all need to try to stay cool, manage our emotions, and stay frosty, and stay vigilant. Don't give the enemy what they want. They want to see Americans fighting each other in the streets. They want to see Americans defacing our own memorials. They want to see Americans try and overtake the Capitol in a violent insurrection. All this type of crap has our enemies celebrating. but don't give it to them. Don't give them what they want. Stay vigilant. Because now, more than ever, stakes is high.
Stakes is high. You know them stakes is high. When you talking about five.
And stakes are high, of course, around my New York Knicks and around the hockey playoffs and around the Senate election in the state of Nebraska. And coming up, I'm going to talk to Dan Osborne in the longest and most candid conversation anybody's really had with the independent veteran trying to unseat the incumbent Republican. We're going to talk about the protests. We're going to talk about Gaza. We're going to talk about Ukraine and much more. But first, we're going to talk about the chaos, especially around the elections, because now is the time to stay vigilant, especially if you want to be Trump's vice president or run for any higher office in America this year or any year ahead.
Specifically, when you write in the book, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me. That, as I understand, is now being removed from the book at your request.
Yes, when correct? I became aware of that, we changed the content and the future editions will be adjusted. And, you know, I appreciate that. I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I should not have put that anecdote in the book. And at my request, they have
that
removed it.
That specific meeting didn't happen?
I'm saying that I'm not talking about that meeting. I'm not talking about my meetings with world leaders.
But you there's do some talk that about are in meetings the book. With world leaders.
There's some that are in the book, and then there's some that's not in the book. Many
but why
of them
are there
actually,
two specific mentions of meeting Kim Jong-un and talking about him and a specific memory? I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. Did you tell your ghostwriter to
you
write
know,
that?
I've specifically have worked on policy for over 30 years. And over that time, I have traveled around the world and I have met with leaders around the world. And that anecdote, I've asked them to change the content and it will be removed.
It's a simple question. Did you or did you not
meet with Kim Jong-un? That's the answer that I have for you is that it will be adjusted. And as soon as I became aware of it, that content was removed.
DeSantis, or maybe DeSantis-ing. That's what we should start calling it when a politician gets exposed over and over again as not ready on the national stage. He or she was DeSantis. And Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, continues to be DeSantis, or to DeSantis herself, whatever we call it.
But when it ain't working out, we gotta see it down south. Baby, let go, go, go.
It's baseball season after all, and we're deep in it. That's why my voice sounds like this every week. But it's awesome, and it's important, and it's exhausting. Kind of like an election year and politics. 2 nights a week of practice, and 2 days a week of games every weekend. And I only have 2 kids. I don't know how those of you with more than 2 kids do it, like our friend Jared Young, who joined us a couple episodes ago. You're my heroes. But we had a huge week of T-balls and minors Little League Baseball this weekend. Our mighty A's continue to roll in T-ball. When they're not trying to eat the grass, sit on the ground, or chase the ball all at the same time, creating what Coach Ballgame, an amazing guy everyone should follow on Instagram, calls the Seagull Effect. Now, the Seagull Effect is when all the kids on the field, including the base runner on the other team, all run after the ball like a flock of seagulls after a piece of bread on the beach. That's what's happening at our T-ball games and among the media around the Trump trial. And my gritty Marauders of the 8-year-old division had a tough but character-building loss in the freezing rain. It was cold. We had 3 kids out. We had to play with only 8 players. But we gutted through 4 tough innings, led by the only girl on our team who was also our best all-around player. But like in the big leagues, at 8 years old, you find out who can hit and who's not ready. The few kids that can really hit and really pitch shine. Just like in presidential politics. And Kristi Noem is that kid with all the latest gear, the new cleats, the best bat, probably the one that's outlawed, and every time she steps up to the plate, she whiffs every time. She doesn't even know how to hold the bat correctly, but she refuses to be coached. She's all flash and no substance. And she's adamant. She doesn't want any coaching. And all you can do is watch her fail. And it's painful. And that's what she continues to do. And we all can just watch it. Like DeSantis, the more she tries to hit the big league hitting, the more she's exposed as not a big league hitter. The American people can always see through the BS. Always. So, DeSantis, that's what we should start calling it when a politician gets exposed over and over again as not ready on the national stage. DeSantis. Or she was DeSantising. Noam continues to be DeSantis or to DeSantis herself. Because the American people see through all the bullshit, always, eventually. The American people aren't stupid. Now, they're slow sometimes, maybe often, but they're not stupid. And sooner or later, they see all the fakes and the bullshitters for what they are. DeSantis, Noam, Menendez, Kennedy Jr., and eventually, finally, more and more, after all the lies, indictments, trials, and court proceedings, Trump. Because this year, I think, over time, the same is becoming true for Trump. More and more people are finally seeing him for what he is. And in the end, that's why, in addition to crazy Kennedy peeling off some of Trump's votes, I still predict that Biden will win. Most of all, and especially with independent Americans. Because in the end, Biden's just not as bad as Trump. And that might be enough to have him win the biggest election of our lifetime.
It's the final countdown. The final countdown.
Yeah, the American people really aren't stupid. They're slow, often, but not stupid. And sooner or later, they see the bullshit and fakes. And the same is becoming more and more true for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We've covered him at length on this show. The guy who was a Democrat last year, the guy who likes to spread conspiracy theories, and the guy who recently got the endorsement of all people, actor Kevin Spacey, who has multiple allegations of sexual harassment against him. But Kennedy's got a much bigger problem, for me, that I think reveals the whole thing. It's his comments on 9/11. I'm a 9/11 first responder, and I don't think folks have actually heard him in his own words. So in this episode, I want you to hear for yourself what RFK Jr. has to say about 9/11, what might be the most investigated incident in American history. Here he is in his own ridiculous and dangerous words.
You mentioned 9/11. The official explanation of 9/11 you buy?
Which is what?
Al-Qaeda attacked us on 9/11.
I don't know what happened on 9/11. I mean, I understand what the official explanation is. I understand that there is dissent. I have not looked into it. I haven't examined it. I'm not a good person to talk to about it.
Well, I mean, so there's doubt in your mind that Al-Qaeda was responsible?
Well, I don't know. You know, I know that there's strange things that happen that don't seem...
What are the strange things?
Well, one of the buildings came down that wasn't hit by a plane, so... You know, it was Building 7 or Building 10.
That collapsed because two of the world's biggest buildings collapsed on top of it.
No, they didn't collapse on top of it. My offices were down there. My offices were closed.
So one of the buildings in next to the Trade Center.
No, there's pictures of it collapsing. There's nothing collapsing on top of it. I mean, I don't want to argue any theories about this because all I've heard is questions. I have no explanation. I have no knowledge of it. But what you're repeating now, I know not to be true.
To clarify, yes, I could have been more precise here. The government's official report found that Building 7 was hit with debris from the North Tower. That impact caused fires, which led to the building collapse. It's very well documented, and there's nothing strange about it.
It's not something that I endorse one way or the other. But I do think that it ought to be permissible in this country to question official narratives.
I couldn't agree with you more. Okay. I've spent 3 decades reporting on Al-Qaeda and interviewed bin Laden and spent a lot of my life going around the world reporting.
I know you have. I admire you greatly for that.
But I just saw on the 9/11 investigation, this was the largest criminal investigation in history. There are 500,000 leads, 170,000 witness interviews. You're not accepting, but that kind of was a
Don't tell me what I'm accepting or not, because I never said I don't accept
it. But what are you saying? Because you're saying that
I have no expertise in it.
You have, But you still have questions about it.
Well, I'm not, you know, I haven't read the data myself. And unfortunately for me, Peter, because it's made my life kind of difficult, is I don't always accept official explanations.
I want you to remember that and share it. And think about the fact that this guy wants to be Commander-in-Chief of the United States. I think that should be a disqualifier. But it's not yet. And he's also got other problems, including his own family. If you haven't heard, his family's been pretty united against him. And some of them are actually pretty creative and talented, including his cousin. The Kennedy family's getting really creative, and we all know they're good at politics. And now his cousin, Jack Schlossberg, who is 31 years old, has called his cousin, who's 70 years old, a prick, suggested he was lying and using steroids, and that he was lying to all of us and portrayed him as a Russian stooge and a stalking horse for Donald Trump. And he impersonates some pretty interesting people, including a fictional Massachusetts fan of the Kennedys named Jimmy, who kind of sounds like Ben Affleck in a Dunkin' Donuts commercial. And he's damn good.
People talking, a lot of people talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You know, I'm a fan of his father. And you know, his uncle, rest in peace. I remember the day where I was, the day he was killed. I mean, it was a tragic day. The entire country wept. But listen, that guy, he's a prick. The new guy, the young guy, he's a freaking prick. He's lying to you. All right? Independent third party independent. Yeah, freaking right. He's got Trump's donors. He's got Trump's advisors. Him and Trump go way freaking back. Don't be fooled by that. Don't throw away your vote. Vote for Biden. It'll feel good. It's going to be fun. We're going to keep growing. This economy is going to keep freaking booming. We're going to boom. Everybody's going to get freaking loaded.
And if that wasn't enough, there's breaking news that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says there's a dead worm in his brain. Yes, we all knew there was something wrong with his brain, but we didn't know there was a dead worm inside. The New York Times had an extensive story, and they've actually been covering him quite extensively lately, revealing that there was an abnormality on his brain scan that was, quote, caused by a worm that got into his brain and ate a portion of it and died. And this comes from Kennedy's own deposition, where he said, quote, the doctor believed that the abnormality seen on his scans was, quote, caused by a worm that got into my brain and ate a portion of it and then died. Look, I don't want to make fun of anybody's health issues, but I do want to reveal a lack of honesty. This is a guy who says he's not sure about 9/11. This is a guy who begs questions about vaccines that are saving people's lives. This is a guy who says he's got no medical problems, and Joe Biden and Donald Trump are the only ones who need to worry about their poor health. Robert F. Kennedy is no independent. He's no viable candidate for Commander-in-Chief, and he's someone we should all keep a close eye on, tell your friends, and most of all, stay vigilant. Kennedy's a fake. He's a fake independent. He's a fake candidate. He's a fake a lot of things. And I think the American people know a fake when they see it. And the same is true on the battlefield, especially in Ukraine.
Маю лузі червона калина похилилася. Чогось наша славна Україна зажурилася.
President Zelensky, that's no fake. He's the real deal. Maybe the realest and most important world leader of our time. That's why Vladimir Putin wants him dead and won't stop until he is. And there's new reporting that says a Russian spy agency tried to assassinate President Zelensky, which frankly shouldn't surprise any of us. Putin's probably trying to kill him daily. This is just an example of what we know about. So remember, The people who are real are the ones we need to stand with. And the ones who are fakes, whether they're Kennedy or Putin, are the ones we need to watch out for. And when the chips are down, real knows real. And that's why Americans, all of us, independent or otherwise, need to stand with Ukraine and keep it real. Hey, real respects real, and the same is true in the NBA, and that includes my mighty New York Knicks, who now everyone knows are for real. And if you didn't see the Game 7 against Philadelphia, whoo, no quit, all grit, close knit. That's their motto, no quit, all grit, close knit. What a series. I'm exhausted, New York is electrified, and most of all, I am so happy that my kids get to experience this. We say New York forever. And we want Jalen Brunson to run for mayor. But it's a positive thing that's bringing the whole city together. And that's happening much more often in New York City and in other cities than these campus protests that are happening. And some want to magnify and amplify and replicate.
Can you describe this look for
us? This is a gold eagle. This describes New York City. This describes Knicks and everything in it. The Freedom Tower, all of that. We New York, we very resilient. We don't play. We scrappy. So this team represents us. This is what New York is about. This is where King Kong died. The Warriors was filmed here. Son of Sam was born here. You know they filmed the first Ghostbusters here? Do you understand that the Marshmallow Man walked through here? I'm going to holler at you later.
This. Talk about real. I've already watched this with my kids 5 times. And I think Tracy Morgan will make a hell of a mayor. But he's not running for mayor, and he's not running for Senate. But our guest in this episode is, and he is another one who's keeping it real. And that's why he's ascended. That's why he's a name we're talking about. That's why we've got him on this show. And that's why he just might become the next United States Senator from Nebraska. He's independent veteran Dan Osborne.
I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that mean, man? I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that mean?
Dan Osborne started out in the Navy. And his entire life, he's worked with his hands. He's worked with his heart. And he's kept it real. Now, he's running to unseat Republican incumbent Deb Fischer, who's the opposite of real. And I talked to Dan when he just got finished with his latest work shift in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm going to ask him all the questions you've heard me ask the other candidates. Why is he an independent? Why is he running? Who's he going to vote for? And why should we support him? And he might just be the realest guest we've had on this show in a long time. Welcome to the next episode in our series, Meet the Independent Candidates 2024, and our second conversation with an independent veteran. Welcome to the show that always keeps it real. Welcome to Independent Americans, episode 280.
I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that mean, man? I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that mean?
Ladies and gentlemen, independent Americans around the country and around the world, the weather is heating up and so is America. Protests are happening across campuses, the NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs are here, and we are deep into the most important part of the political season. And we're continuing our series on Meet the Independent Candidates 2024 with the independent candidate for Senate. From the great state of Nebraska, the great and powerful Dan Osborne is with us on Independent Americans. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for that intro. I've never been called that before.
Well, I hope it's the first of many because you're an inspiring guy and I'm looking forward to getting in. We've never met in person, but it's great to finally meet you virtually here. I know you were in New York last week and I missed you. But I want to start, like, you know, your whole campaign is unconventional in a lot of powerful ways and a lot of challenging ways. Can you tell folks where you came from? Like just now, right? Like you had to take off of work to have this conversation. And I think that might be a good setup for the whole thing. Can you explain where you were before you were here?
Yeah, I drove here actually not too far from where I'm at now. I was at Boys Town working on rebuilding a chilled water pump. And I didn't even wash my hands. So I just took off and drove over here for this. And hopefully I don't get in too much trouble when I get back.
Well, if you're getting in trouble, they're doing something wrong, because you're really advocating for a lot of folks in that community. And I think nationally, and your campaign's caught a lot of attention. But let's just start, Dan, with who you are, where you are. You know, give folks a little bit of background if they're just meeting you for the first time. Who are you? Where are you? And why are you doing this big thing of running for U.S. Senate?
Yeah, well, I'm in Omaha. I moved to Omaha when I was 7. My dad worked for Union Pacific. That's how I ended up here. So all I remember, really. But I went to high school, grade school, high school here. I graduated high school and I went immediately into the Navy. My grandfather retired from the Navy. My father was in the Navy. My mother was in the Navy. My uncles were all in the Navy. And my brother, he joined the Marine Corps. So we don't talk to him anymore. But, I still don't hold it against him. But, I joined the Navy. I was aboard the USS Constellation aircraft carrier, CV-64, the Connie, for those that were served in the Navy. It's scrap metal nowadays, but I did 2 West Pacs aboard that ship, and I got an honorable discharge. I came back to Omaha, and I went to University of Nebraska at Omaha, and I joined the Nebraska Army National Guard. I went to 19 Kilo School in Boise, Idaho. I was on the M1A1 Abrams tank crew during that time. And my wife became pregnant with our first daughter. Her name is Georgia. She is now 21 years old, and she's a professional dancer in Hollywood. So it's a very exciting stuff. Although, you know, I use professional loosely. She gets paid for her gigs, but I still have to flip the bill for a lot of things out there. But it's okay. She's living her best life. But when she was born, you know, I knew I had to go get a job. So I got a job working at Kellogg's as an industrial mechanic. I worked there for 20 years. My first day on the job, I don't know if you remember who Tom Selleck is, but old mechanic came up to me. He's like, "Kid, you joined the union yet?" I'm like, "No, sir, I have not." He's like, "Well, you need to go join the union." I'm like, "Okay." I didn't know what unions really even were back then. But I joined the union, and I kept my head down, and I worked hard for a lot of years, and we got good contracts. And then the old guy started to retire. I kind of, you know, started to become the old guy. And our contracts started to get we started to lose things. Kellogg's became more of a corporate entity than a family-run company, and beholden to their stockholders, whatnot. So I decided it was time for me to get involved. I ran for executive board. I got elected vice president. It was a whole new change into the guard for the e-board, but the president stepped down after about 3 months. You get yelled at a lot in that job by both members and management. So although I don't like getting yelled at, I knew it was an important role. So I stepped into it. I was doing that for about a year, then COVID hit. We were working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day during COVID as essential workers. At one time, 50% of our workforce was forced quarantined and or sick. But we kept 4 North American plants running. Throughout that time, I was going to use a phrase that I probably shouldn't use, but we kept the plants running. And our contract expired at the end of that year in October, but Kellogg's made record profits during COVID. They, in 2020, they went from $19 billion to $21 billion. And that year, the CEO gave himself a $2 million raise. The board enriched themselves. The stockholders enriched themselves. So we figured this was going to be an easy contract for us. But the first day of negotiations, they sat across the table from us. They said, "We're going to take your health insurance. We're going to take your cost of living adjustments," which was our only form of wage adjustment or wage increases. And we're going to implement a permanent style two-tier wage system, which ultimately means there's going to be, you know, the 2 tiers of workers. The lower tier usually graduates to the upper tier. There would be no way for the lower tier to get into the upper tier. Essentially, everybody would be on the lower tier. Mm-hmm. For me, that was my old crap moment. And I had to figure out what going on strike means, how to pick it, why you pick it, calling police and fire and just trying to get as much information as I could. Created a picket schedule for 500 of my members in Omaha. On October 5th, midnight rolled around. We did not come to an agreement with the company. They had no intention of giving us an agreement. But so we shut down 4 North American plants around the country, and we walked off the job for wages and benefits.
And so that launched you into the leadership and advocacy and national recognition on some levels, right? And stepping out and into the public eye. How do you go from there, Dan, to deciding you want to run for U.S. Senate?
Yeah. So without wasting too much time on the strike, we were on strike for 77 days and we won a pretty decent contract. But I remember walking back into that manufacturing plant and just feeling an enormous sense of pride for what we were able to accomplish for working people. 1500, we saved 1500 good paying jobs around the country, 500 of them in Omaha. And, you know, that definitely played into wanting to run for United States Senate. I want to do it on a bigger scale. That feeling that I had, that pride I had for doing something for working people, I want to do that for the people in Nebraska. Mm.
So you've decided to do it as an independent, which, you know, you've been a hardworking guy your whole life. So you're taking the hardest path possible, which is running as an independent. You know, you in the past, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you were a Democrat maybe till 2016 or so. Why are you running as an independent, and how do you define independent? We've talked to a lot of folks with different perspectives, and you are now defining independent for many people in this high profile national race. So why are you an independent, and how do you define independent?
Well, yeah, you mentioned 2016, I registered as an independent. And I felt disenfranchised by both parties. You know, it was the Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, debates. And I just felt like that the two parties were starting to cater to their extremes even back then, more so now. Politics is so polarizing. And, you know, I just never felt like I matched an entire party line, right? So it just wasn't for me. So I'm an independent. And what an independent means to me is basically like Nebraska. You know, we got a nonpartisan unicameral here. It's the only one in the country. There's no R's or D's next to names, you know, when you go to vote. We have open primaries where independent people can vote. But I like to think that I take the best of both sides and try to combine it into one, if you will. But the coolest thing about running as an independent has been I'm not beholden to a party line. I don't have anybody tell me the way I'm supposed to think about an issue. So whether it's ag, nursing, education, we go out and we find people in that field. If it's education, we find special ed teachers, elementary teachers, rural teachers, university professors, and then we draft our policy based on what those people want and need, not what somebody's telling me.
I want to talk about some of the positions you're focused on, and I want to talk about your opponent, but this is a question I've been asking everybody as well. So let's assume you break the odds and you win and you're elected to the U.S. Senate. Who will you caucus with? Will you caucus with the Democrats, the Republicans, or neither?
I've never been asked that before. Thank you for asking me. But George Norris is the one who created the unicameral here in Nebraska. He was the last independent senator. His last term, he didn't caucus with either party. I don't plan on caucusing with either party. I want to create an independent caucus, maybe even a Nebraska caucus. Who knows? Because here's the thing. If I tell you, Paul, that I'm going to caucus with the Republicans, what does that make me? It makes me a Republican. So why wouldn't I be running as a Republican either way? So I want to be a true independent, try to be a maverick on this and just really change the status quo and change American politics as we know it. I know it kind of sounds crazy to say that out loud, but that's the way I feel.
No, I frankly think that that's the answer that most true independents want to hear. It's what Evan McMullen said when he ran for Senate in Utah and put up a pretty competitive race. I mean, those of us who know politics know the challenge is you don't get leadership positions, right? Like that's how Bernie Sanders ends up caucusing with the Democrats. And even though he's, you know, one of the farthest left folks and never served in the military, he becomes the chair of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. So I think that we obviously recognize that there's a challenge built into that, but I think that does help people clearly understand where you stand. Let's take it one step further. It's a presidential election that's dominating the national news. Independent, so-called independent candidates that I've criticized, including, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Cornel West, Jill Stein are out there. Will you endorse anyone for president? Will you endorse one of them, Biden, Trump, or no one?
I can tell you, I'll tell you one good thing about each president. Biden's been, you know, probably one of the most friendly pro-labor presidents of that I remember. And my 401k never did better under Trump. But with that being said, I go out and I talk to a lot of people in Nebraska. And the consensus is most people are frustrated with their choices. I fall into that consensus as well. So, you know, I might just go ahead and write in my dad. He was a Dodge County commissioner there in Fremont, Nebraska. So I'm gonna write him in.
I appreciate the creativity of that, but is that also what you'd recommend your supporters do? Because if you're not voting for one of them, in, you know, in a place like Nebraska that tends to be red, right? That's gonna you know, obviously you know, kind of get lost, right? Like a write-in candidate. Your dad might get some votes and other folks might get some votes, but is that what you'd advise other, especially young independents, to do as well?
Well, I would tell those people to just vote their conscience, you know, vote on who you think's going to do the best job for you. Like, I had a guy come and I was sitting at lunch one day and he slaps his union card down in front of me. He's like, you can take this and you can shove it. I don't want it anymore. And I go, okay. And he's, sit down, you know, tell me what's going on. And he just received a mailer in the mail that, you know, our union was telling him to vote for Joe Biden. And he's like, I'm not voting for Biden. And I go, okay, well, first of all, take this card back and put it back in your wallet, because what this card represents is your health insurance and your wages and the rest of your benefits. So you're going to need that. So put it back in your wallet. But this card doesn't represent a president or who you're supposed to vote for. So, you know, I understand that international unions obviously would like to see Joe Biden reelected. But rank and file members or just anybody, independents, and just say, hey, just vote for who you believe is going to do the best for you.
I want to pull that apart because I think it's a fascinating part about your campaign. A lot of folks, for example, assume veterans have been overwhelming Republican, and they have voted that way a lot. And people assume that union folks are going to vote Democrat because that's been the case in the past. I come from a union family. You know, my father used to work in the GM plant when he was young, and then he was in the union at Con Edison and then went through to management. My brother is still in the union now. He's in the local one too. I've been around a family when they're on strike, when my dad was in management and had to cover on the strike, when my brother goes out on strike. So I've been around that. But I think you're tapping into something. I guess what I want to ask you is, you know, the Democrats seem to have taken union votes for granted. But I know you look at the police union here in New York or the firefighters union, they tend to go to the right. Do you think that union votes are up for grabs here and is, can be a real stronghold for independence as we build this movement?
I don't think it's really changed. I think the rank and file members represent the rest of the state very similar too. You know, as you move up into leadership roles, you probably see a little bit more Democrats than you do Republicans, because they, you know, they work in that field. But yeah, ultimately, I think they just represent the rest of their state.
Yeah, I think it's exciting because I think, you know, union folks are not a monolith any more than veterans or the active duty military or anyone else. But I think that the political parties would like you to think they are, right? You know, I think it's much more complicated than that. And that's a part of your race that's going to be particularly interesting. But it may also, you know, your pro-union positions may get you support from the Democratic Party, which is something that you're going to need if you're going to win. I mean, you're up against Deb Fischer. She's an incumbent. She's a Republican. You've called her, you know, do nothing Deb Fischer. Can you talk about your opponent and your strategy to win? You're going to have to be creative here. I know that you have outraised her recently, but she's got something like $4 million in the bank. I mean, you're David here against the machine and Goliath. So talk about your opponent and how you are going to plan to beat her.
I think my opponent is, she's just a part of the cog in the corrupt machine of DC. The United States Senate is full of millionaires and billionaires, business execs and lawyers. Like there's nobody like me in the United States Senate. Actually, all of Congress, only 2% of elected officials are working class people. So that's, I believe, where the corruption comes from. You know, she takes money from Class One railroads, Big Pharma. She votes against the Rail Safety Act. We've had three derailments here in the last 3 weeks. One was this close to an anhydrous plant, could have leveled the whole town of Chapel, Nebraska. I talked to the railroaders out there. That locomotive was flagged for repairs. If the Railroad Safety Act was enacted, then that would have been prevented. So it's frustrating to sit back and watch that continuously happen with our elected officials. You know, I tell everybody this because this statistic still, every time I say it blows my mind that $50 trillion since 1980 has moved from the bottom 90% of Americans to the top 1% of Americans. It's the biggest migration of wealth in human history. And that begs the question, how has that happened under our watch, under our noses? Well, it's because our elected officials are on the take and they create legislation that benefits multinationalistic, monopolistic corporations, which is the 1%. And this is what we're left with.
So how are you going to beat her? I mean, I think it she can easily try to label you as, you know, a Democrat wearing an independent name. She's going to say the union's behind you. What you didn't mention there that I've heard you say is you're also in favor of tax cuts, right? And things like that. But is there any part of your position, especially on, let's use the union and the reform push, that's not traditional Democrat? Is there any way where you're breaking with the Democratic Party? And I'll also come back to it. How are you going to beat her? I mean, yes, she is all those things, but you got the chip stacked against you here.
Well, it's probably noteworthy to mention at this point, there's been two polls, one by Change Research and one by PPP, and both polls have me neck and neck with Deb Fischer. And the last poll, we didn't force undecideds to answer questions, but it was 30% of them are undecided at that moment. So there's 300,000 registered nonpartisan voters in Nebraska. That's a pretty big number. It's the fastest growing demographic of registering voters. And I think that just goes to show that, you know, is everybody wants to say Nebraska's so red, but I think we're more independent than we are red. For sure. We have an independent spirit, always have. We've raised, we're encroaching on our first $1 million. Most of that, I think it's an average of $37 per donation. Deb Fischer takes money from mostly a corporate PAC. So, you know, this campaign is resonating with people. People are ready for a change. It's also interesting that on the first poll, a lot of respondents didn't even know who I was. I got the name. It's pretty synonymous with Nebraska, with the most winningest football coach.
I was going to ask you that. I mean, you've got an advantage here that's baked in. I don't know how you calculate it, but, you know, there are probably plenty of people who think you might be Tom Osborne, the former Nebraska coach, which would help you for sure.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. But I think what that poll really says is people are just ready for a change. You know, they said they'd vote for me versus Fischer and didn't even know who I was. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's inflation. It's hurting people. It's hurting me as a working class person. Your dollar doesn't stretch near as far at the pump in the grocery store as it did even 5 years ago. So when people are hurting, they tend to pay more attention. But I think the thing that separates me from Deb Fischer, three things: curbing inflation. She was censured by three Republican parties for fiscal irresponsibility. So that's, you know, there's 34 trillion reasons why there. I think we differ on the border. Well, I differ on the border and Second Amendment from Democrats. I think without a border, we don't have a country. Deb Fisher's had 12 years to close the borders. She's done nothing. She voted against the border bill, which Republicans drafted and Democrats were ready to sign on to, and she votes against it. So I don't think she wants the border closed because she takes money from big ag corporations, and big ag benefits from a constant labor source, undocumented labor source coming up here. And, you know, they can take advantage of that. So that's frustrating to me. But
on the Second Amendment, can you talk about your position on that? Now it's different from, a traditional Democrat or someone else.
Yeah. And I talk about the Second Amendment. You know, I branch out into rural areas all the time, and I live in the city. So, you know, being out in central Nebraska is just different than it is being in an urban area. And I think our laws could reflect that. You know, I tell people when I go to GOP county meetings, I've been to three of them. I have seven more on my schedule because I'll talk to anyone. But I'm like, just have all the guns you want. It doesn't matter. But if you live in a city of close to a million people, I'd like to default to, you know, what the police officers want, because those are the folks and the first responders. Those are the people who have to deal and see the gun violence every single day. So I don't know exactly how that looks, but that's the idea that's rolling around in my head.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful differentiator. I mean, you have an ability to offer common sense solutions, and your background is unique. And, you know, one of my favorite senators, even though he's a Democrat, is John Tester, who's a pretty independent minded guy from Montana, who talks a lot about his experience on a farm, right? And how he can represent farmers, and he understands ag. I think you have the same kind of potential to represent workers. You also used to have a senator in that state that was a Congressional Medal of Honor recipient and a Navy SEAL, my friend Bob Kerry, who ran for president, represented the Senate well. I'm curious if you've sought his endorsement. And building off of that, he was obviously a leader in foreign policy. Deb Fisher is going to say, you don't have any experience in foreign policy. Can you talk about, you know, your views on foreign policy? And if you're able, Ukraine, Gaza are happening right now. Why is Dan Osborne qualified to lead America on those critical foreign policy and national security issues?
Yeah. So to touch on Bob Kerry, we have gotten his endorsement. I sought that early on because, like you, I respect the crap out of Bob and for what he's done for Nebraska and the country. But there's three qualifications that the founding fathers set up to run for United States Senate. You got to be at least 30 years old. So I'm overqualified there. you gotta live in the state you're running in. You gotta be an American citizen. So that's how they set it up. That's certainly not the way it's run nowadays. It seems pretty much anymore. You have to have an Ivy League degree, $4 million in the bank. But, you know, as far as foreign policy goes, I'll touch on Ukraine first and the Russian aggression. Ukraine and Israel, or the Gaza in particular, have commonalities in the fact that a lot of innocent people are getting killed. We're seeing the bombing of schools and hospitals, people starving in the streets. It's an atrocity. It's hard to watch. And as somebody who's seen the cost of war firsthand, I didn't do any combat myself, but I've served with people that have, and like yourself. And thank you for your service. But I've seen how it can affect people, and it's hard. It's a difficult thing to see, and difficult things that you'll never unsee. But I was talking to a guy who put it to me the best, in the fact that, you know, they're the other side of not supporting Ukraine is America first, right? We have enough problems here at home that we shouldn't be the world's police, and that's the argument. But he put it as, and I've adopted this as well because I believe it, supporting Ukraine is America first. Like, I got an 18-year-old son who plays the viola and guitar and the piano. He's an amazing human being. such a gifted artist. To the thought of him getting drafted into the military is extremely difficult for me. And we're fighting a proxy war in Ukraine. We don't have any boots on the ground. But if this war, and nobody has a crystal ball, right? But if this war spills into Europe, then, man, we have to stop Russia before that happens. And we should be supporting the Ukrainian people because they didn't ask for this. So that's my take on Ukraine. And with
Israel, that's important, Dan, if I can pause you. So if you were in the Senate, you know, last week, you would have voted to support the Ukraine funding bill?
Yes.
And okay, now comes the harder one, right? I mean, now we've got Gaza and Israel. What's your position there? I mean, you know, right now there's a lot of folks saying we should pull funding from Israel. Folks are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. What's your position there right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, Israel had an attack on October 7th that, you know, I've seen the video footage. It's atrocious what happened to them. And they certainly have the right to defend themselves, just like we did after 9/11. But what I'm seeing now in Gaza is at what point can you claim victory? At what point did you reach your retribution, if you will? You know, I think the last statistic, and, you know, it is a statistic, right? But 13,000 children killed, that's difficult. So I would support a ceasefire, and the United States is positioned uniquely to be able to broker a peace deal along with, you know, Egypt and Qatar. And as far as supplying Israel, it has to be, in my opinion, it has to be defense weapons only, not weapons you drop from the sky.
Got it. Thank you for taking us through that. I got two final questions that are a whole lot easier here. Number one, you know, I'm rooting for you. You've got my endorsement. A lot of folks are pulling for you. But your chances are you're not going to win this. Maybe you will. I'm rooting for you to pull it out, just like I'm rooting for my Knicks and I'm rooting for the Rangers, right? Those are my areas of focus right now. But if you don't, what are you going to do? Because now you're a movement leader. Are you going to go back to working in the factory? Are you going to stay involved as an advocate? You're a powerful voice. If you don't win this one, what's plan B?
Well, I try not to think about that too much, Paul. Thanks for bringing that back into the forefront of my mind. But I'm not going to go back to work in a factory because I got fired from Kellogg's after not too long after the strike. So, but I'm a steam fitter now. But, you know, I don't know. I guess the question is, I don't know. I guess I'll just go back to work and continue flying by the seat of my pants and see where it takes me.
I appreciate the candor, and as I'm sure you're an awesome steam fitter, I think we need you out here raising your voice and advocating for folks who don't have a voice. You're going to generously stick around for a couple extra questions. Big shout out to our Patreon members. Dan's going to get the car question and all the other good stuff. So if you're not a Patreon member, please be sure to sign up and help support this kind of content. But Dan, final question. I've asked this of all the candidates, and I think, you know, I said this to Shalane Etchinson last week. I think it's really powerful, especially to have veterans, people who are known to be independent, who are known to be country first. But I'm going to give you the floor, you know, 30 seconds, a minute and a half, whatever you need. Why should independents in America and why should independents in Nebraska support Dan Osborne?
Yeah, you know, I just did an event with the Disabled American Veterans out in Fremont, Nebraska, and I met three Vietnam vets, amazing people. The stories were intense. And, you know, a lot of people won't speak freely about their time there, but these guys did. But one of them told me, you know, he's going to vote for me. And he was a Republican. He said, I always vote for vets. And I go, okay, well, why is that? And he said, well, when you sign up for the military, you're basically saying that you're willing to pay the ultimate sacrifice for your country. And that's how much you love your country. So if you're willing to do that, then you know, being in continue that service as a representative of all the people, it goes, kind of got caught up there. But yeah, it speaks to who I am and how much I love this country. And what you're going to get from me is I'm not going to take a dime of corporate PAC money, because I believe you know, that's the problem in this with the corruption in D.C. And you're going to get somebody who's going to work for the people, because, you know, they're going to be my boss. And at the end of the day, I'm accountable to them.
Excellent. Well, I'm really thankful that you've joined us on the show to introduce yourself. I hope you'll come back and we can keep track here. I mean, you've got a lot of support that's growing around the country. I hope this helps put you on more people's map. But most of all, I just want to thank, you know, you thank me for my service. I think this is, you know, this is like volunteering again, you know, and enlisting in this fight is really important, especially in these early days where you are often alone, you're often outmatched, you're often outgunned. You're still, you know, doing a really important job back in your community, and you're a great role model. And I think that's really important here. You're talking about your family, you're talking about your values, and you're somebody that we can all look up to and root for, Dan. So I wish you the best, and we'll be rooting for you, and stay vigilant, my friend.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Helpers always keep it real, so look for them out there. If you think Dan's one of them, check out his campaign and find the link in the show notes and support him in whatever way you can, whether you're in Nebraska or you're in Ukraine. He's a guy that we can all get behind, especially now. And he's definitely a helper.
Always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines. If you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
The helpers keep it real. And one guy who always keeps it real is our frequent guest and dear friend, Rob Serra, retired firefighter and 9/11 hero. And he flagged one for us that I want to flag for you. We want to give a big round of applause for a hero. While off duty, FDNY Lieutenant Rich Cannon of Ladder 148 was returning home with his family when he discovered an engulfed car on the Belt Parkway right before the Belt Parkway exit. Without hesitation, Lieutenant Cannon sprang into action and got the victim of the vehicle out with the help of an off-duty EMT, who also sprung into action. Firefighters arrived on the scene and secured the situation and made sure the victims received immediate attention. Outstanding work by Lieutenant Cannon and the off-duty EMT, who put themselves in harm's way to help people in need, going above and beyond the call and keeping it real, because that's what helpers do. And that's what we do on this show. If you like what you heard and you like what you see, be sure to follow us wherever you're listening or watching right now. And be sure to check us out at independentamericans.us, where you can also keep it real and help us keep the realness coming, and join our Patreon community. For just the price of a cup of coffee or a beer, you can help us keep bringing the voices of independent candidates to the American people. A conversation with a guy like Dan Osborne is not something you're seeing on cable news. So check it out and spread the word. And I would know, because I'm on cable news. For better or worse, every once in a while I visit the old self-licking ice cream cone that is cable news. And on Wednesdays, I will join Colin McShane on News Nation. Look for that. And I'm often on MSNBC's Deadline White House with our friend Nicole Wallace. There's a lot of fakes out there in cable news and in the media, but Colin McShane and Nicole Wallace are not one of them. Check them out and check me out and let me know what you think. Follow us on social media and sound off. Because this movement is really growing and you can feel it now. Independents are the future, and we're not alone in our independence. We may be more divided than ever before. That's what you hear in the news, but don't believe it. Independent Americans and Righteous Media are fighting and working to change that, adding light to contrast the heat of all the other political shows, and keeping it real. Because our independent movement is the hope for the future. Country over party, people over politics, light over heat, busting up the status quo and fueling a new movement that spans all across our society. If you like this episode with Dan Osborne, share it far and wide and invite others to declare their independence. And send me a cough drop if you like too. But stay vigilant, my friend, because eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. And know you're not alone in your vigilance. We're all vigilant, and we're all in this together. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. Thank you for listening, and thank you for keeping it real. Down with Hamas. Down with Putin. Slava Ukraine. Let's go, Knicks and Rangers. And stay vigilant, America. Stay vigilant. And keep it real. Powered by Righteous Media.